views on this program are opinions of dentist industry experts and do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor. You're tuned into Dentist Money Industry Expert Series. Now here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show. I'm your host, Reese Harper, here at the WRDC with two of the most insightful local real estate experts in the markets, Mr. Rich Andrus and Tanner Milne. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Reese. Appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Reese.
That was a pretty big intro, okay? So don't be intimidated by it.
I would like to be known as Mr. Tanner Milne, as in Mr. Rich Andrus as well.
Okay. Moving forward, I will let you know that your first name, you will only be known as Mr. Tanner and Mr. Rich. Okay? Thanks for coming on. Today, we're going to talk about some of the mistakes that you guys see dentists make with real estate. And then we're going to also talk about some tips that you guys think people can consider as they're transitioning, relocating, exiting, a lot of different transaction types. So here's what we want to start out with, though, today is I want to start with Tanner. And Tanner, you can tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into the dental market, and then we'll do the same thing, Rich, if you can do the same thing. So Tanner, go ahead and let us know how you kind of got into the space.
So I've been in commercial real estate about 13 years, and when I got in the market, and overall our firm, we work with others that are not dentists, but about 10 years ago, we saw a need with dentists that there was no specialist or expert that was helping dentists from site selection all the way through the process. And so that's where we kind of dialed into that niche to really understand the entire life cycle of a dentist practice and space.
Yeah. I mean, did you guys end up deciding to go into the dental niche kind of right out of the gate then? Or how long did it take before you kind of saw that that was something evident that you guys wanted to pursue?
It was really an organic navigation into the dental specialty, where it was 2004 in the market. There were a lot of things happening in Phoenix. Every dentist was buying an office condo. And I saw a natural, I guess, fit with dentists. They really, a lot of them were just anxious, a lot of money in the market, easy to get a deal, and really there was no one helping them decide, you know, do they lease, do they buy, what are their options, and taking them through a process. So that was kind of where it all started.
Makes a lot of sense. Rich, talk to me a little bit about your background and how you got into this and met up with Tanner.
Yeah, actually, I was in that same period of time, 2005 to 2007, Tanner and I were attending Arizona State University in the MBA program.
The Arizona State University.
Go Devils. And so we were together, and I was actually at that point in time, I was in healthcare sales. So I was selling medical supplies to doctors across the state as well. And so there was a lot of synergies. Tanner was selling the real estate to doctors and to dentists, and I was doing a significant volume of just basic merchandise and equipment.
Cool.
And during that time, during our MBA program, I ended up taking a national job and started traveling, a significant amount of travel across the country, which is a great experience. Negotiated some very large contracts. But at the end of the day, was traveling to a point where I was just away from my family, my kids, my wife. And so at one moment, Tanner said, "Hey, I've just recently, come upon a pretty strong volume of dentists looking to do things across the state, and I'm not able to handle it all on my own." And so I was brought on specifically to the Menlo Group, specifically to handle dental commercial real estate in the West Valley, in the west part of Phoenix. And so that was my task. Coming into the market, and I signed on September of 2010.
Jeez, nice. We've been down here for a while, and it seems like you guys have spent more time in some of the specific markets, in this market specifically with dentists more than anybody else. And it seems like it isn't just I've interviewed a bunch of people from Phoenix, and almost all of them have mentioned how it's how important it's been to involve a dentist specific, or at least a dentist aware broker into the site selection process, but especially when it comes to construction and space planning and design and all that. It seems like it's not just something you can call your brother-in-law up who's also a commercial broker and ask him to help you find space. Do you guys see that it's pretty common, though, that you have to kind of explain to dentists why it's important to have someone who is specific to dentistry, or is it something they just kind of get out of the gate and say, yeah, I'm looking for a dentist-specific broker? Tanner, what are your thoughts on that?
It's funny you say that. I met with a pediatric dentist last week, and he said his wife is a realtor. You know, I love
speaking. That was it. My wife is a realtor.
Is a realtor, so why do I need you? But at the same time, he was asking me about good areas and demographics and different types of properties, what's happening, you know, on certain parcels of land, what will that be? And I call that tribal knowledge. And you have no tribal knowledge if you're not in the tribe and you don't have a specialty in the area. So there's certain intangibles of what we do that's hard to really quantify in our value. But, yeah, everyone knows someone that has a real estate license. Initially, I think years ago, we continue to battle that, but not near as much in the more recent, because I think, and maybe this sounds a little bit arrogant, but I think a lot in our, and at least in our market, it all kind of comes back to our firm, Menlo Group, as the market leader, understanding the market and 10 years of history and a lot of different transactions. So when they're talking to, whether it's, you know, their supply rep or their equipment person or their advisors, I think they're hearing a repetition of, well, Menlo Group's going to help you avoid very significant mistakes.
Yeah. So let's jump into that a little bit. If you guys have to start, let's provide some really kind of tangible education on what are some of the main mistakes that you guys see dentists make when they're going into this site selection decision, or just generally with real estate and the transaction in general. Rich, let's start with you and have you kind of list something that comes to mind.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the first mistakes is that, you know, dentists are very smart individuals. I mean, they have a degree, a high-end degree, and they've done very well in school. And so dentists generally know what they like and know what they want. And they confuse dental commercial real estate, or commercial real estate in general, as being a finding service, a locating service. When, you know, and so they think, hey, if I can find my space, then I can handle this. Yeah. I can do this.
Yeah. And I think that's a common misconception, you know, like it, because it does feel like that sometimes, like the only reason I use a broker or residential realtor is just because they're going to help me find the property. But that, you know, it's a space finder. If I could find it, then I don't need anybody, right?
Exactly. And so I think the first mistake individuals use in looking for space is they think that it really is just about locating. And commercial real estate is much more about the intangibles that you negotiate. And both Tanner and I like to say, you know, our value proposition to our clientele is that we negotiate. That is what we do. That is what we are paid to do, is to truly negotiate on behalf of our clients and negotiate not just, you know, not just lease rate, not just price per square foot, not just the economics of a deal, but negotiate what's truly important to a dentist throughout the entire life cycle of a dental, of a dentist's life. So from the time that they start their lease to what's important during a lease renewal period, and what's important to a dentist when they transition out of their space. The time to be thinking about getting out from a lease perspective is when you're getting in, and you know. And so that's really where we are.
It's sometimes hard to explain that in 30 seconds or 10 seconds, right? Because there are so many different problems or advantages that can be negotiated into a contract. In 10 seconds, you can't really explain one thing that really makes the difference. But over a 10 or 15 year period of that lease, when you look back over it and see how many different attributes or mistakes could have occurred or did occur, you know, that's when the value of advice up front on the transaction really starts to matter, right?
Absolutely.
Tanner, what's something that comes to mind as you think about mistakes that they generally make?
Well, I think generally speaking, when dentists don't know that we even exist. In fact, I just talked to a dentist today who knows me because I helped him lease a vacancy. He owns three buildings. I helped him lease a vacancy that he had a few years ago, and I helped him. He was considering buying a new building, and he's been working through a lease renewal on his own, and literally today, just, I've known him for 10 years, said, I didn't know you did lease negotiations or lease renewal negotiations.
Yeah.
And I think in that entire process, there's so much pressure put on whether they're buying the practice or renewing the lease. There's so much pressure in, it's got to happen today, or it's got to happen by the end of the week. And
there's a time deadline.
There's time deadlines, as if, you know, the deal's going to die if it doesn't happen. And when that happens, they sign things, they agree to things that are just, that don't make sense, whether it's economics or...
When you guys say economics, you're talking about the price they pay, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just reviewed a lease for a dentist that he signed a new 10-year lease when he bought the practice, and it was about 2 years ago, and he's struggling, I guess, to be polite. He's struggling in the practice, and he's asking if there's anything I can do, but he's 2 years into a 10-year lease, and I said, why did you sign this lease? I mean, everything about it is wrong. You know, a full personal guarantee, the guarantee endures any renewal that he does. He's paying 200% over market.
Wow.
And I mean, nothing was looked at. And I said, no offense, but why did you sign this? And how did you sign this? And he said, well, I was told that if I didn't sign it, you know, the deal was going to die. And I'm thinking, who makes a 10-year commitment without any review, any advice? And I think Rich and I would both say, you don't have to hire us, but somebody that knows the trade, knows the space, has to review these things. Not, you know, whether it's an attorney or a commercial real estate broker, someone that really understands the structure and the space, because not only is he paying way too much money, the entire lease structure is terrible for him.
Yeah. Do you think that, why don't you think people reach out, Rich, and get an opinion on a situation like that? You know, what makes them just assume that they can just move forward and get it done?
Well, I think the first reason is they're scared to lose the opportunity, and you have to understand that commercial real estate is fairly cutthroat. So a listing broker, for example, represents 100% the owner, and a listing broker applies pressure. In our marketplace, in transactions, when it comes to the practice sales are represented by a broker, and that broker represents almost exclusively the seller. They're paid to sell the practice. They're paid to sell the real estate. They're paid to lease up the real estate, and deadlines help do that. And so I think number one, the deadline is one of the reasons that people feel that there's scarcity of product and or scarcity of opportunity, which is true in many cases, but that doesn't it doesn't keep you from, or keep a dentist from having the ability and the right to be able to check the facts and get things accurate and get things correct. We can do that quickly. We do it quickly. We meet timelines, deadlines all the time, but at least people walk into a situation with eyes wide open and know exactly what they're getting.
So they feel like if I get someone involved that it's going to screw up the deal because the other broker that's selling the property, right, doesn't really want to get anyone else involved because it can make the deal happen slower, or it can cost him money. What's the dynamic there that people really need to be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, both of those excuses are used. You know,
yeah.
You need to have a broker on your side from the very beginning in order to engage a broker,
which isn't really the truth.
No, absolutely not. I mean, we've entered into private negotiations and said, hey, let us represent you. I'll represent you. I'll represent your interest. Let's enter an agreement and of what that would cost, what that would entail, and let us represent you. Let us truly represent you, and you can have representation.
But don't you think that people, when they have that happen, they feel like if I get somebody involved, though, then I'm not going to get as good of a deal, right? Don't they have that kind of fear? Like somehow the selling broker is going to make the buyer feel like, If you bring a broker into this, you know, you're not gonna get a good deal, or I'm not gonna be able to give you as good of a deal, or
absolutely,
right?
I think that threat's there, but you know, there's absolutely Even and that's again, that takes the economics. Pull off the economics altogether. We're talking about lease clauses that absolutely will affect your business.
Yeah.
You know, for example, we have a situation that we're aware of right now with a dentist who agreed to a lease with a relocation clause inside the lease, which basically allows the landlord at any given time to come to you and relocate your business. And so if another entity comes forward and is willing to lease that space at a higher price, then they could move you to the back of the plaza or move you to the second floor, the third floor, move you wherever they are. They have that ability in the lease. A relocation clause is something that we strike 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And it's just something that's overlooked often. And if Dennis just signs it, then at the end of the day, they've given their right away to keep the exact location that they've often negotiated for.
Yeah, I think it's a really it's a very difficult transaction to know every deal point and understand it well. And sometimes I think there's for a variety of reasons, people are just hesitant to engage somebody, and they shouldn't be if they're trying to defend their best interest and put themselves in a situation to have the best possible outcomes. Not always the best possible price. It usually is. That's not the price per square foot is not the only reason that you should be looking at a lease contract.
Right? Absolutely. You know, I know of I helped a client this last year who whose landlord, doing very well, retail plaza, very strong demographics, very strong practice, loves the practice. They're rocking it. It's every dentist's dream that the demographics are perfect. And all of a sudden, the landlord basically let them know that he no longer wants them in the plaza.
Yeah.
They don't have a renewal option.
Oh,
the option to renew was not in their lease. At the end of their term and their time that they've built that business, they were evicted. And so we were forced to run and find a location within a couple of miles, which we were fortunate to do. But the expense of the real estate, the expense of the relocation was borne 100% by them at 100% the cause of no renewal clause.
Wow.
At the time they signed the lease.
So I think we've kind of hit on that a lot. There's a lot more to an agreement than the price per square foot. Well, Tanner, talk to me a little bit about location. If I'm a dentist and I'm thinking about all the different factors that have to do with my location, you know, is there different types of properties that I should be looking at more than others? Like, what's ideal from a location perspective?
I think ideal depends on your business plan. There are so many different types. I mean,
yeah, that's great.
In some instances, you have a dentist in an office condo project with no signage or visibility, but he's got a great internal referral program, and he gets as many new patients per month as the dentist that's in the extremely busy grocery-anchored shopping center.
So do you think, as a general rule, people shouldn't necessarily turn down a location that doesn't have as good of signage just because it doesn't have as good of signage? You know, I mean, that might not be the only consideration for most people.
I would say that should be a consideration. I would always lean for better signage, better visibility, and that in the list of, you know, say 7 criterion for an optimal location, signage is one of them.
Yeah.
But when I've always thought that signage and visibility was key to a successful practice, there's plenty of groups and dentists that I know that have what I would say a terrible location with terrible signage that do exceptionally well.
Yeah, they break the rule.
Right. So yeah. Is that, again, I would say they're probably more the exception, and the rule should be probably better visibility, better signage would always, I'd say, assist in additional impressions and visibility and enhance your exposure to new patient flow.
Yeah, no question. So what are some other attributes, though, of location besides visibility that we'd want to consider that come to mind? You said there's a few, right? And that's not the only thing to consider. What's another factor when it comes to the space that you're about to pick, you know, that you'd really want to be thinking about?
Well,
I think everyone says location's everything, but what else besides location really matters?
Well, I think it really depends also on, I mean, if we're just talking about general practitioners, general dentists, and not specialties, because it depends on synergies or referring sources, or what other, you know, from a foot traffic perspective, what other types of businesses can cross-pollinate or you know, build synergies where you can either cross market or major employers where you can sign up with, you know, you can accept their insurance per se.
And sometimes those can be a strategy in and of itself, right? I mean, that's a strategy right out of the gate that doesn't necessarily depend on visible traffic from or signage.
Right. Yeah. And I would say, I mean, parking is a key attribute. I don't know that that's something. I recall a few years ago a dentist just calling me more as a favor. He's already basically decided on the location and was in escrow to buy the building. And I said, he's like, what do you think? And I said, there's not enough parking. Well, I didn't even have to spend more than 5 minutes on it. And I said, have you gone to the city? Do you know that it can even be a dental office? And 3 weeks later, I got a call back from the guy saying, you were right. He could have bought that building, you know, been $600,000 into a building, not enough parking for a dental office.
Interesting. Is it easy to do research in the Phoenix metro area on demographics so that you can kind of narrow down your choices? Or is that a pretty hard thing to do? And is it easy to do research on competition and how densely populated my area might be and whether that's a good location compared to another?
There are certainly, we can help with that. But there are companies that do solely that mm-hmm. I think do a better job than we do. They specialize in demographics and research, although we can easily provide demographic information. But I think a lot of times it doesn't really, if they don't know what they're looking for, or don't have a business plan or any strategy,
help.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's good insight. Rich, is there anything in particular that came to mind about location even that we'd want to continue to chat about?
Yeah, you know, I think that, and we've kind of talked about this, but I love to say my mantra is that you should always let the business plan lead your real estate decision.
That's a smart piece of advice.
Too many dentists say, hey, I found a really good price on real estate, or I found a really good, you know, whatever it may be. And then they try to fit their business plan around the real estate. And in my experience, most cases that people try to fit a business plan and then try to justify the demographics and justify the location, then they're justifying their business plan and trying to create a business plan around a location. My experience is that is not as productive as someone that has a true business plan that comes and says, this is the type of patient, this is the type of demographic, this is the type of, you know, I love to do retail dentistry, I'm going to stick in the retailer. My patients grow, or my referrals grow by word of mouth, and I can be in a professional park, and, you know, someone that truly understands how they
do internal marketing.
Yeah. Then we can really work on that and take that model and be able to find the best location in whatever submarket.
Yeah, that's good insight. Talk to me a little bit about when you should walk away from a deal. You know, like when should you just walk away from a deal instead of forcing a deal to happen? Because I feel like that's a common. Sometimes people force things, I guess.
Yeah, I think the first thing that you should do is look at the entire cycle. So let's say you're signing a 7 or a 10 year lease. Do the economics and does everything in the deal make sense for the entire 10 years?
Yeah.
And so let me just, you know, typical rule of thumb in our marketplace is that a lease and or real estate cost should be anywhere between 5 to 7% of the total collections.
Okay.
So what does that calculate out to be? I was with a dentist looking at a really high-end location, wanting to do a group practice, 4,500 square feet. And so we did that quick calculation. And the rent, you know, we basically calculated the rent and said, hey, here's the annual rent, divide it by 7.07, and all right, this practice needs to do $2.5 million. Is this location a location that you can do $2.5 million out of?
Mm-hmm.
And that dentist said, you know what, I don't know that it is. Well, guess what? That's a good gut check.
Yeah,
let's get out of this.
That's great insight.
Let's get out of this location. Let's go find a location that you know, where do you really see yourself? Everybody dreams of doing the 2.5, but that's what you need to do to justify the rent in year one.
Yeah.
So now it's going to climb over the next 7 years. Let's be clear and make sure we understand what that means.
That's great insight, man. Tanner, what are there any kind of main takeaways that you would want people to think about when contemplating a transition or space, you know, moving to that next location, I want to make sure that we give kind of both of you a chance to give some final takeaways and wrap up on what you feel like people should consider as they you know, as a kind of parting thoughts.
Well, I think to wrap up the last question, walking away is always an option. And I think, as I talked to an attorney yesterday, and I think the general sales cycle or decision-making process doesn't allow that to be the case, that not doing the deal is indeed an option, because when they're a few thousand dollars into an attorney and maybe a CPA or an advisor in evaluating the practice or the decision or whatever that is, it's an incremental cost, a nominal cost to the entire deal or life cycle of the practice. So again, I would just say walking away is always an option, and there's really never or rarely a circumstance where just dismissing key pitfalls or key decisions because you're going to lose the deal. I think what happens, especially as dentists are buying a practice, they might lose two or three and then feel the urgency in the next one, the one that they feel fits all their criteria to move forward. But then they might be talking to a real estate broker or an attorney saying, this deal, there's some things that are major gotchas in this document or in this lease, but they feel that they have to concede or agree to them because they don't want to lose another deal, or they've already lost two or three deals.
I've looked everywhere. This is my last option, right?
Right. And yeah. And again, I guess the fact of the matter is, it's okay to walk away from a deal, even if you've got some money and time invested into it, if it's not the right deal or the right situation. And so I guess I would just say, what we try to do is present all the options and level the playing field in not just, you know, decision-making and structure and negotiations, but allow them to see pros and cons of all the different decisions, whether it's starting a practice or relocating or buying a building, and so they understand the decisions. And at the end of the day, they don't really have to do any of them if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. It's good to have a broker involved that has that mentality as well, so you just don't feel the pressure. Sometimes I think that a lot of the pressure to do a deal can come from their advisor, you know, and that's where it's nice to make sure that you're interacting with people that don't that feel like it's okay to walk away if the deal doesn't make sense. Rich, any parting thoughts that you'd have about anything that you'd want to leave with everybody here at the end?
You know, one of the things I like to say is you'd never do your taxes without a CPA. Right, we'd never just take our revenue and our tax information to the IRS without getting professional advice. So reach out, get professional advice. Dentists are very smart. They know what they're doing in many cases. This is an area, from when it comes to commercial real estate, it doesn't hurt to pick up the phone and get some professional advice. And we can save a lot of heartache, a lot of headaches, and a lot of money from the mistakes that occur in commercial real estate.
That's great insight, guys. Really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're really busy, and appreciate you popping in to do the show. Tanner, Rich, it's always a pleasure. And how would people get a hold of you if they want to reach out and connect?
You can call the office or look at our website, menlocre.com, or 480-659-1777.
You had to think about that phone number there for a minute.
No.
Okay, just kidding. A lot of phone numbers. Rich, what's your email address if people want to reach out and get in touch with you?
You know, my email address is rich@menlocre.com.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to doing this again soon, and I'll bring another set of questions next time, and we'll continue to make sure people avoid mistakes, as it has to come with these transactions, kind of the biggest decisions of their lives. So appreciate it, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Reese.